Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Sheila Cast, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. It's a classic story of the American century. The veteran returns from war and hits the books on the GI Bill to start a new life. Like other generations of GIs, Iraq war vets are entering college, though with less help from their government. They're a little older and more experienced than their college peers, perhaps more prepared for the discipline of academic life. But there's culture shock, too. Today, we're joined by three veterans of the Iraq War, now undergraduates, who are here to share their stories. This hour, On Point, Iraq Veterans on Campus. Joining me from Santa Barbara, California, is David Hassan, a corporal in the Marine Corps who served as Arabic translator in Iraq in 2005 and 2006. He's no longer active service. He's 25 years old and now in his first year at the University of California, Santa Barbara. David, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Sheila.
And with me in the studio is Talia Havas, a 24-year-old sophomore at Harvard College who served 5 years active duty in the Marines. She's now in the ROTC program. She's done tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, working in intelligence. As a Chinese linguist, she's also served in the Far East. She left Harvard after her freshman year, after 9/11, and this is her first semester back. Talia, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Sheila.
And joining me today from Tulsa, Oklahoma, is Matt Steiner, a Marine Corps corporal and gunner who saw action during the initial invasion of Iraq. He's no longer active duty. He's now a 25-year-old senior at Oklahoma State University. He's a 2007 Truman Scholar and works part-time in the Tulsa Mayor's office. Matt, welcome to you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. And Matt, let me start with you. You come from a military family, so I'd like to know, when did you volunteer? Why? What did you do overseas in the service?
Okay, certainly. I always had a sense of service. My father had been a major in the Marine Corps, and my brother right now is a second lieutenant in the Marines. My second cousin was a Marine in Vietnam, and he fought and died there, was killed. Both my grandfathers were in the Navy. I had three of my grandfather's brothers in World War II. Two had been wounded. One was in Korea. My grandfather's brother was in Korea also, and he was wounded. Both were in World War I, and it's almost just as a, before you join the service, to pay tribute to a Jacob Henry Steiner who fought and died in the Civil War in Fort Smith, Arkansas.
That's quite a military family.
Oh, definitely. Family reunions are pretty interesting. But I think really 50% of it, or maybe even 60% of it, was I needed that discipline at the time. I was kind of rambunctious in high school, and
you were how old?
Wasn't very studious.
You were how old when you volunteered?
Let's see, I was 18.
Right after high school.
Yeah, exactly. I went to boot camp about a month and a half after graduation.
And what did you do in the service?
I was a gunner and assistant chief for 155-millimeter howitzer section by the age of 20. And then I was also a Marine combat instructor, water survival, and a green belt martial arts instructor.
Okay. And what are you studying now?
Political science.
Why?
And I graduate in 2 weeks, two and a half.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't realize you were that close to graduation.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a good thing because my GI Bill runs out here in about a month also. So,
and we're going to talk more about the GI Bill. Talia mm-hmm. Havas, you are 24 years old. You're a sophomore at Harvard. When did you volunteer for the Marines and why?
I volunteered for the Marine Corps in 2002. I just finished my freshman year at Harvard. And, of course, that was 9/11 that year. And that really gave, I think, my generation of military a sense of purpose, a real call to serve. That was certainly the case for me. I chose that point to leave, first off, because of 9/11, second, because I was restless. At that point in my college career, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do with my degree. I didn't have a real good idea beyond just getting a degree for the sake of getting a degree.
And what were you studying?
I was studying chemistry at the time.
Okay.
What I wanted to do. So I left to join the Marine Corps. I think everybody thought I was crazy, but I had a wonderful experience. I got trained in Chinese. I had the opportunity to serve overseas. So,
And you've been back how long?
I've been back since May, so a couple months now from Afghanistan. I just started college again this semester.
And was it clear, at what point while you were overseas, was it clear to you that you wanted to pick college up again? Because you said you left not really knowing why you were in college.
Well, I think it had always been a goal, sort of a commitment I made to myself when I left college, that I would re-enter college. I was actually in Fallujah when my class graduated from Harvard with the class of 2005. And that sort of was an incentive right there. Sort of the contrast between my classmates' lives and my own. I wanted to come back. But also, right now I'm studying to be an officer. I want to continue on in the service to give back to the service as an officer. So that's
You are in ROTC, and so you're studying to be an officer.
Right.
In that sense. But is your academic major also military-related?
I'm not sure how much sense it makes, but I'm an Earth and Planetary Sciences major, which is a lot like geology.
Huh.
So.
Okay. David, am I pronouncing your name correctly, Hassan?
Yes.
Tell me why you volunteered and when.
Just after 9/11, I pretty much made the decision. I was going to school in Hoboken, New Jersey, which is right across the Hudson River from Manhattan. Actually, I just dropped out when 9/11 happened. And it took a little bit less than a year, and I went to boot camp. It's kind of one of those 9/12 decisions.
Okay. And you did what in the service?
I was an Arabic translator. Actually, Havis and I went to the language school together.
Oh, okay. And so that's what you were doing your entire time in the service. And did that mean, what kind of work does an Arabic translator do? You translate, but I mean, are you involved in interrogations? Are you translating with soldiers on the street? What are the settings in which you're doing that kind of work?
I did a little bit of everything. My MOS primarily was involved in signals intelligence, but I did a little bit of everything while I was over there.
And when was it clear to you that you wanted to go to college?
Probably about 2 years after I joined the Marine Corps. So about 3 years before I got out. I don't know. I didn't really enjoy being in the Marine Corps, to be honest.
Because?
Why didn't I? I don't think I fit in is really what it comes down to. I don't think I had the military kind of personality. Not to say I didn't try. I tried really hard to be a good Marine, but I think ultimately I wasn't very successful.
How do you feel now that you're in college? Do you feel you're fitting in at the University of California, Santa Barbara?
Yes and no. I mean, I love being back in school. I'm obviously quite a bit older than the rest of the students in my classes, and that can be a barrier. But you know, I'm there in order to get my degree. I'm there in order to reap the fruits of academic life. So in that sense, I feel like I fit in.
And what does it, beyond just the fitting in? Are you comfortable? You point out that you're there for academics. Do you feel like you're having a different college experience than the students around you?
Certainly. I don't know how well it's known outside of California, but UCSB is a pretty big party school.
That's kind of my impression. Yeah.
Yeah. It's also actually a really good school academically, but it's a pretty big party school. So I'm definitely I don't really do the party thing in the way that a lot of the other undergraduates do. So there's that barrier, but I feel like I found outside interests that I can share with other undergraduates, and I've made friends that way. It was really uncomfortable when I first got there, I've got to be honest.
I want to pursue that later too, but let me ask Matt Steiner in Oklahoma the same kind of question. How do you feel on campus? What's it like being a college student after having been in combat?
Well, I think as far as just being a student, it's 1,000 times easier than being in the Marine Corps and being in combat. I mean, you take that kind of situation in Iraq and, apply that kind of discipline and you're under that stress. Just turning in a paper and reading a book for an exam is really nothing. And I don't want to sound cocky or arrogant about that, but I think the guys from World War II, they learned that as well. I mean, that whole situation of being in a wartime, if you're under that kind of stress and if you go to the college environment, as far as the workload, it's really not that big of a deal. But as far as assimilating to college life, that was a real shock. I think the first semester for me, those first 4 months were pretty difficult to try to get back into the swing of not just college life, but I think civilian life in general.
And it was a shock. We don't have a lot of time left in this segment, but tell me what was the shock?
I think definitely because I was 22 years old. All of my classmates were 18-year-olds. And just my I think, prior experiences. And I think that was just kind of it. You know, I left when I was 18. I had been doing everything on my own for quite some time. And to me, college wasn't just something to do right after high school. It was, I had a job now. I was getting, you know, a GI Bill for it. I was getting scholarships for it. You know, I had a mission to accomplish. So I think in that sense, that's where it was definitely different for me, that I had a goal. I was very goal-oriented rather than I'm here because my parents sent me.
This is On Point. I'm Sheila Cast, in for Tom Ashbrook. We are joined today by three young veterans, Matt Steiner from Oklahoma State University, David Hassan from the University of California, Santa Barbara, and Talia Havis from Harvard. All three served in Iraq. Talia, you got to listen to how Matt and David feel about being on the college campus. What's it feel like for you?
Well, I share a lot of Matt's impressions, actually, of college life. I also approach it as my job. I'm here in Boston studying, where my colleagues in the Marine Corps are out in Iraq and Afghanistan doing much harder jobs. I think the biggest thing the Marine Corps has given me is really a sense of perspective, sort of that distance to be able to look at your studies and see how they fit in maybe to your life in general. But also, I mean, when you've been in the military, when you have that discipline, the perspective, your exams and your papers aren't too much of a stress. Harvard's really a wonderful place as far as fitting into the culture. It's a very liberal school, and with that liberalness comes being very accepting of people no matter what their occupation, their views are. So my classmates have been really, really supportive of me as a Marine.
Do you have a sense of your classmates being very aware of the war? I mean, does it loom very large on campus?
No, it doesn't loom very large on campus. It's almost unnaturally distanced, but the students do have an awareness of the war. It just isn't a reality of everyday life in the same way it is for us in the military.
Okay. Matt and David, what do either of you have a feeling about that, of whether, is there any frustration on your part that if your fellow students aren't very aware of the kind of experience that you've been through?
Well, it's not so much frustration about... Yes, this is David. Sorry. It's not so much a frustration on that level. I am frustrated at the lack of the lack of awareness about the war in general, not just on campus, but in America in general. You know, this war really directly affects a real small fraction of the population, and it doesn't affect people's daily lives a bit, and that's pretty frustrating to me.
Was that a surprise to you coming back and settling in on campus? How distant, you know, the war was?
I don't know how much of a surprise. Yeah, it was pretty surprising, actually. I mean, you know, you're stationed on a base, and there's other Marines, or at least at Camp Pendleton, there were lots of other Marines around, and then lots of other Marine family members, and so the civilian population was really touched heavily by the military population. And so just being in a place where that's not the case was a bit of a shock.
Matt Steiner, in Oklahoma, do you have, are your classmates interested in your experience? I mean, what kind of reaction do you get when they find out about it?
Usually they're pretty curious, and they just want to ask a lot of questions. But, you know, I really agree with David and Talia. I mean, you have a country of 300 million people with less than 1% of the population participating in this. And I think, to go back almost to kind of not sound redundant, but what David said, I mean, that was kind of the shock to me, is that how distant the war was, in a sense.
Well, do you have a sense that the students you're with on campus, you said they're curious, in an approving kind of way, or do you sense hostility?
Yeah. No hostility whatsoever. I mean, I've never encountered that. But they definitely, and I usually never bring it up, and if somebody asks, or they'll find out, but and then they'll just want to simply ask me questions about it, and I have no problem doing that.
Talia, you mentioned Harvard as a liberal place and therefore tolerant, but what what kind of reaction do you pick up as a veteran?
Usually very positive, and I am an ROTC student. I do wear uniforms one day a week, so my presence is probably more visible than the other gentlemen on campus as a veteran. I get a really positive response, a lot of curiosity. I do get the feeling that it isn't as much a reality of life on campus as it is in a military base, but I suppose that's to be expected.
David Hassan, you have been at times involved with the Iraq Veterans Against the War.
That's correct.
And I don't know quite how to describe whether you still are or what you're...
Oh, no, I am. I'm a member of Iraq Veterans Against the War. I'm actually trying to start up a Santa Barbara chapter right now of that organization.
At what point did you reach that realization?
I would say on the way back from Iraq. I didn't know about the organization at that point, but on the way back, I really reached the conclusion that what we were doing over there was really wrong. And that was a little over a year, almost a year and a half before I got out. So, as soon as I got out, pretty much, I submitted, a membership application to IVAW, and I've been I've been working with them ever since.
I don't know whether either of our other veterans want to say anything about that. Does it frustrate you that...
No, I certainly respect everybody's views on this. I think, in my point of view, the great thing about being in America is that you're protected. Your well-being doesn't depend on your wealth. And what comes with being part of the country is sort of following the decisions it makes in foreign policy. I think you can't hindsight these things, but the decisions that our country's made have been made for the benefit of the country. And I sort of feel it's my duty to support that. But I also completely understand everybody's different opinions. You can't please everybody.
Matt Steiner, there's been some, not a great deal of public discussion, but some discussion about whether there should be a draft. Mm-hmm. When you look around at your peers who haven't served in the military, and you come from such a strong military family, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, I think we should start a draft. I mean, I think I heard somebody, leadership in our government, say that, how detrimental to our society it's going to be if Iraq falls. Well, if it is that detrimental, then get everybody over there. I mean, I think I went to a football game a couple weeks ago, and one of my buddies called me from Iraq. I think he was on his third tour, and he was just burnt out. He couldn't wait to get out. And then I remember just looking around and seeing how many, kids were in the stadium, 18-year-olds. And it just kind of doesn't make sense to me from almost a social standpoint that you have, like I said, less than 1% of a country participating in a conflict that is supposed to be so detrimental. And it's so, if we're not fighting them over there, then they're going to come back over here kind of mentality. I mean, I think the draft would be good.
David Hassan, what do you think about a draft?
Well, I think if they instituted a draft, the war would be over in 3 weeks. And so in that sense, I think it's a good idea. I think the reason why... I think it's purposeful that our society is so disconnected from this war. If you remember, and I remember pretty strongly the president's addresses to the nation after 9/11. What did he say? He said, "Go shopping." I remember seeing while I was in Iraq some graffiti scrawled on, I think, the inside of a porta-john, actually, said, "The Marine Corps is at war. America's at the mall." And I think that's purposeful. I think that if this war touched more of the U.S. population, would reevaluate the legitimacy of our occupation. They'd reevaluate what this war is costing America as a nation. I think it would cause a much stronger public outcry. And in that sense, I think a draft could only only do good things.
So two very different reasons for supporting the draft. Talia, when you are on campus and looking around at lots of young people who haven't served, haven't done public service, what are your thoughts about a draft?
Well, I wouldn't support a draft. I'm very proud to have served. And more than that, I'm really proud of my classmates who are at Harvard or at MIT and are choosing a career of service, choosing to be in an ROTC. Choosing that service to country over the money that they're offered in the private sector. But I don't think we're really in an era of total mobilization for war where we're a draft.
But should we be?
I'm not sure that we should be. I also don't really see that military service is for everybody. And as much as I embrace it for myself, I wouldn't want to force it on all of my classmates.
I'd like to pull some of our listeners in. Drew is calling us from Burlington, Vermont. Hello, Drew.
Hello. Yeah, I'm also a fellow veteran, Iraq War veteran, and I'm attending the University of Vermont here up in Burlington, Vermont. I had a question for the guest today pertaining to the GI Bill. I was curious, do you find it hard to get your benefits at the beginning of the year, and there's kind of a lag between when you apply for your benefits and when the money actually comes in? And also, do you find that the GI Bill money is enough? For instance, my tuition went up 6% since last year, and my benefits went up less than 1%. Also, as a fellow Iraq veteran against the war, I would just like to say good luck for getting your Santa Barbara chapter started, David.
So, David, let me ask you. Well, first of all, David, you are paying for college with GI, or at least partly with GI Bill benefits, right?
That's correct.
So, what about Drew's questions? Is it enough? Is it too hard to get even what you're entitled to?
With the current rate of fees at the UCSB, my GI Bill benefits cover almost exactly the tuition fees. At my school in particular, it covers it exactly. That doesn't factor in any cost of living expenses. But I end up having to take out loans at the beginning of the year to cover the fees for the rest of the year, and then pay back the loans with my GI Bill benefits.
So
over the course of the year.
So, but you're having the same experience Drew seems to be having. Then you don't get your benefits at a time when they would be most useful to pay your tuition.
Oh no.
And Matt Steiner, you're in Oklahoma. You are also getting GI Bill benefits.
Yes, correct.
Enough? Soon enough?
No, it doesn't really even touch it. Tell you the truth, and I kind of go along with what David said. It's not really prorated. So I mean, you pay for that tuition up front, but then you still just get that one check. I think I get with the kicker, it's about $1,225 a month. So if you have that tuition that might be $3,395 like I had, they're still not going to pay. They don't prorate it is what I'm trying to say. So then you're kind of left with the remaining of the semester just kind of paying it off as you go.
There's a big difference between the Montgomery GI Bill, which is the name for the one that's in place now, which I think is a maximum of $14,500 a year benefits, compared to the World War II era GI Bill, which was essentially if you could get into a college, the government would pay for it. Talia, I'm not asking you about your own GI Bill experience because I understand your tuition is paid by ROTC, correct?
No, I actually don't have an ROTC scholarship, but Harvard has given me a very generous scholarship.
Okay, I'd like to sort of get a sense from all of you of whether you think that there are bills in Congress to beef up the GI Bill. Do you think that that's something that America ought to do? Talia, I'll start with you.
I think that investing in veterans is a great investment in the country. These are people that have already demonstrated their dedication to the country, their discipline. I think that that would be money well spent. I do think that the GI Bill we have now, it's helped a lot of my friends. It's made going to college more of a reality for them. But I think it would be a good investment.
Matt Steiner, what advice would you give Congress about GI Bill?
Oh, I think what Senator Webb and Senator Hagel are doing is outstanding. But, I mean, I guess it took two combat veterans to realize this, to get the ball rolling on something like this. But I agree with Talia. I mean, it's an investment. You're not just giving somebody a check. You're giving them money to invest in their lives for the benefit of this nation. I mean, if you look at so many people in Congress right now that use the GI Bill after maybe Vietnam, World War II, there's a percent of them that are leaders of this country. And I think it was an investment, and it worked great.
I'd like to hear from Bob in Lexington, Massachusetts, who's calling us and has some thoughts about the GI Bill. Bob?
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a little bit older. I remember the Vietnam War, and first want to say I'm totally in favor of the draft. It really was the draft that forced me to look at the issue carefully and write a letter to my draft board telling them that I would not participate. And my heart really goes out to Dave. I can't imagine a greater heartbreak than fighting a war and in some sense realizing the betrayal of your nation and the lies that got us into that war. But to the point is, my father was a veteran of World War II, and on the GI Bill, he got two college degrees. Not only did the college get paid for, he had a living stipend, and then he then bought a home because of the GI Bill. And compare that to the benefits that you get now. I'm wondering how many of you, and this ties into the draft, if you think that this is somehow connected to the fact that it's no longer a draft and that more people view the Army as a job, as a profession, and therefore not as entitled to any sort of benefits because they didn't make a sacrifice. They just took a job like any other job.
Interesting question. David Hassan, do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't know. I don't know how much the general public feels that way about being in the military. I see probably the reason why the GI benefits are much less than when they were first instated, probably as a result of just slashes in social services across the board. I mean, that's really the only terms I've thought about it in, but I haven't thought about it that much.
I'm just going to ask Talia whether she has any thoughts about whether a volunteer force somehow exerts less claim on the public.
Well, the GI Bill was definitely created in a time of peace, and the way you look at a military is different now that we're engaged in two wars. And I would certainly, in light of the current conflicts, support increasing the amount of funding and the amount of benefits they're giving to veterans.
Matt Steiner in Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, we are at war. I mean, more than just a job. I mean, it's not like you're a garbage man that you wake up 9 to 5. I mean, our National Guard right now is doing their second deployment, the 45th Combat Brigade. They're going to do another 15 months over there. So when these people do come back, I mean, we're at wartime. They do deserve more benefits and upgrade.
Before we take a break, there was a point that I meant to ask Talia earlier, and that is whether you get any double takes on campus in your uniform because you're a woman, or are we past that, or is everybody expecting that?
I don't know if they're so much expecting a Marine to be a female, but I think for the most part, I don't get any more reaction for being a female than I would be for being a Marine in general. So, and the reception is by and large positive.
We're talking with Iraq veterans who are now college students about their views on service and civilian life. We're joined today by three young veterans, Matt Steiner from Oklahoma State University, Talia Havas from Harvard, and David Hassan from the University of California, Santa Barbara. All three served in Iraq. I wanted to talk to Matt, who is calling from Boston, about the environment question. Matt? Hello?
Hello, Sheila. First of all, I just wanted to say to all the guests, thank you for your service. It's very much appreciated. I am not a veteran. I actually was a freshman with Talia. I was class of 2005, so I wanted to say a special hi to her. And I just had two questions. One was if the guests could give the listeners a sense of what they did day to day. They talked about the stresses of being in the wartime. And I feel like with the media coverage, what we often get is just the big events. But if they could just give a short description of what it's sort of like day to day, so that we could appreciate that a little bit better. And secondly, if they got a sense of what their fellow servicemen and women were planning on doing after their service was up, were there a lot of people planning on making a career of it? Were there a lot of people planning on going to college? Did people want to get back and get jobs and start families? Sort of what was the sense of what the other servicemen and women wanted to do? So thanks, Sheila.
Thanks, Matt. Both really interesting points. Matt Steiner, just in honor of Matt, I'm going to throw both of those questions to you. Some description of what it's like to go from high stress to low stress and what the stress was like when you were active duty.
Well, I mean, I think just to reiterate what I stated previously, I mean, it is a high tempo, it's high stress, but then to come back to college life, it's, you know, low stress. I mean, it kind of is what it is. But as far as his second question, everybody in my unit got out. I missed having to go back by 20 days, so then I opted to get out. And I think, as far as I'm concerned, I'm the only one using the GI Bill out of the 25 Marines that came from artillery school with me that I've kept in touch with.
So what are most of the rest of the buddies that you're in touch with? What are they doing?
But you know, some of them use the GI Bill for vocational training, and which I think is something that ought to be brought up as well. You don't just have to use it for college. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to better your life using the GI Bill, going to welding school, or I know there was one guy in my platoon who used the GI Bill to go to some kind of Caterpillar mechanic school, and he's doing really well in Kentucky right now. So you don't just have to use that GI Bill to go to college. You can use it for vocational training as well.
Do you have a sense that the friends that you've kept in touch with from your days as a Marine are settling back in well? Is reentry going well?
It kind of goes person to person, to tell you the truth. Myself, if I have anything, I see a priest. But some of them are kind of experiencing problems just trying to get back acclimated to civilian life. But for the most part, I think a lot of them are just kind of carrying on with maybe what they were doing before the war started, before they joined.
Thanks. David Hassan, let me toss Matt's questions to you. He was curious about the translation from one stress environment to what for some students is a stress environment on a college campus. What kind of stress was it that you felt when you were serving active duty, and what is that transition for you?
Well, it was a very different type of stress. One I think I enjoyed less. There's stress to academic life, and coming back to school after being in the military. You know, I'm a physics major, so I was doing things that I hadn't done in close to 6 years. You want me to do integration by what now? There was stress associated with that, where, you know, I was just doing things that I was really unfamiliar with on a daily basis, and that's mostly passed. It's certainly a much lower stress environment than being active duty, and certainly even much lower than being deployed.
And what's your sense? Have you kept in touch with some of the people you served with, and what's your sense of what they're doing? Whether many of them are going to college, whether they're settling back in easily?
Like Matt said, it does vary person to person. Some guys are I have a couple of friends that are starting up at Berkeley in the spring semester. Got friends that are going to community college. I've got friends that are homeless right now. It's pretty much all across the board. Some guys, you know, sit around and play video games and drink. It really all depends on the person.
Mm-hmm. Talia, stress.
Well, first off, Matt, thank you for your support and for your thoughts. As far as stress, I think the Marine Corps, it teaches you to take any set of conditions, any mission, any adversity, and to make it work. And that applies in Iraq. It also applies back here in Boston. So I think that dealing with changing situations, dealing with different types of adversity that you learn in the Marine Corps to be able to accomplish the mission, it applies equally as well on a college campus. I've definitely enjoyed. I think coming back to college is a great opportunity. I've enjoyed it. It's a different culture, but.
And have you kept in touch with some of the people you served with, and how are they doing, and what are they doing?
Most of the people I've served with are still in the Marine Corps. It seems like a lot of, especially the intelligence community, is staying in. Those that have gotten out, college is definitely, a lot of it college funded by the GI Bill is one of the primary draws. Other friends are going into business. My friends are doing pretty well. And I think that speaks to the fact that they're staying connected with other Marines, keeping that sense of community, the other people that have shared the same experiences.
Let's talk to Amy. She's calling from Northfield, Vermont. Hello, Amy.
Hi, Sheila. I'm a professor at Norwich University, which has a high percentage of returning veterans from Iraq. And a number of our students are also enlisted personnel who've done several deployments in the course of their studies. And I have to point out that not all of them are as well adjusted as Talia seems to point out. A lot of them are really struggling to deal with PTSD conditions when they get back. They're not getting adequate services from either the VA or the university support staff. They just don't have the resources to deal with people who've been through the sort of traumatic events that these students have been through. And they're also just not getting the aid. The DI bill, it comes late, like your students were saying. And I really, really acknowledge all the difficulties that these students go through, but I don't want people to think that it's as easy for all of them when they come back as it seems to sound from how well-adjusted your respondents are.
All right, I appreciate the call. I get Matt. Let me ask you that. You've all said it varies. Different veterans are having different experiences. When you look back on what we've been talking about for this so far this hour, do you think that just by having you three very, very well adjusted people on the show that we're creating the wrong impression?
No, I don't necessarily think so. But I mean, I think also it varies person to person. I mean, there were some people in the Marine Corps that you could join and be an auto mechanic for 3.5 years, or you can go to Iraq and just sit on a base and not even, you know, ever do a combat operation or anything like that. So, you know, when people talk about Iraq vets, stuff like that, I mean, it varies the different kind of MOSs. I mean, time in service. When somebody says that, oh, they fought this and that, well, what did you actually do when you fought? I mean, were you back in the rear or what were you doing? But I mean, I hope people hear this and, you know, a veteran coming back, and I hope they go to college. You know, I hope they see the GI Bill for what it's worth right now. And I hope, you know, I kind of pray that they readjust. And that was kind of the purpose that I wanted to come on this show, to kind of have a positive image of three veterans that were going to college. So, I mean, I know you can read in the paper every day about the VA there is a lack of funding. There are problems. But I hope just to put a positive spin on it in a different light, that hopefully somebody coming back will get to that college or vocational training and use the GI Bill to better themselves.
I am reminded at this point, Matt, that I don't think I mentioned earlier that I did mention that you're a Truman Scholar. You intend to get a graduate degree in public service. Mm-hmm. And do you intend to be in politics?
Oh, definitely. I mean, but like I said earlier, I mean, I had a 2.1 in high school. I mean, the Marine Corps changed my life. I mean, it gave me that discipline. And now, I'm academically doing very well. And so far, I am pretty politically attuned in Oklahoma for that part. And will pursue. I probably will run for office here within the next 6 years.
Should I ask
in
which,
Oklahoma?
Should I ask which party?
The Democrat Party.
Uh-huh. Let me shift gears a bit and ask you, David, let me ask you first whether you keep track of the headlines from Iraq and the news that things seem to be going better. How does that strike you?
How does that strike me? It strikes me as disingenuous. It strikes me as not really related to the full scope of real events going on the ground. This surge happened to coincide with a call-off on suicide bombings by Muqtada al-Sadr, and I don't think that that's being taken into account in the coverage. I think there's a real desire to think that this is going well. I don't, however, think that that's a justified conclusion.
Talia, do you have an opinion on the coverage that we're seeing these days?
The coverage, I do follow. I'm following Afghanistan with a lot of interest now, just
sure.
Having left. And I think that doesn't get the positive coverage it deserves in the news. Afghanistan's a great example of a coalition, NATO-led war effort, where this is an international community of 14 countries that's leading the efforts in Afghanistan. And I believe, just from my experiences over there, that we really are denying the Taliban and al-Qaeda the freedom of movement that they were using in Afghanistan to plot terror attacks such as 9/11.
Matt Steiner, what is your sense of the news that's coming at you? You served in Iraq, and there are reports that the surge has had an impact on the violence there.
I mean, I think with anything in the media, it's always biased. So you just kind of take it for what it's worth. And I think that is kind of difficult to try to filter what is actually going on to what is, you know, not happening. But I mean, as far as the surge, I mean, I don't know it. I mean, we'll know maybe 10 years from now exactly, you know, what worked, what didn't work. I mean, I think it's kind of too hard to anticipate right now. I mean, obviously it failed, but. I mean, but in that sense, as far as the media, it's always a double-edged sword. I mean, in some areas it is correct, some areas it's not.
Let's talk to Peter. He's calling us from Boston, Massachusetts. Peter, I think you are a veteran from the Vietnam era.
Yes, yes. Hello, Sheila. Great show, and my congratulations and thanks to the service veterans. Yeah, I had somewhat maybe, obviously, an older parallels experience. I went to, in fact, BU first year, 66, 67, and one of five kids, father was a police officer. I was on a football scholarship, didn't do too well, so wasn't going to be able to pay to BU, and I went to the Marine Corps in 67, 69. Served with the 2nd Battalion, 1st Marines as a rifleman, squad leader, and my outfit was in a lot of combat back in 67, 68. That's what we did. In fact, most of the guys, my outfit got hit a couple of times, as I did. I only just explained that as what a rifle company was like. Got back out in 69. I was a little more fortunate in the sense I went under disabled vets. They gave you some more money than the GI Bill. One of the points I would definitely emphasize is they really need to increase the benefits for these guys, the young ladies, excuse me, particularly in the private schools. The GI Bill in Vietnam certainly didn't compare with World War II, and the benefits, the guys that didn't get wounded, they got the straight GI Bill, and unless you went to a state school, you were really strapped for the for private school. That being said, I wanted to emphasize how I was motivated by the Marine Corps, and 40 years later, I finished undergrad and went to BU Law School, and I had no association with kids in undergraduate school before who weren't veterans. I mean, I had absolutely nothing to do. BU was a hotbed in 69. I was on a cane, and there were riots everywhere. As long as they didn't wave an NVA flag, didn't bother me. But
and do you have a particular question for any of our veterans?
I hope that they get get focused on just being motivated and just how that they would use that use their experience and in not to get too overwhelmed by things, and how with the VA, for example, that they have to work with the system. They should get involved with trying to increase the veterans' benefits, and I hope that they, are successful. And one of the things to be proud, I can tell you 40 years later, being a lawyer doesn't mean anything as much as being a combat Marine, and I just want them to put it in perspective. I hope it gives them perspective, in their lives.
Okay, well, thank you for the call. I wanted, and we just have a minute or so left, and we're close to Thanksgiving. I'm wondering whether any of you remember Thanksgiving that from the time you were serving, and what thoughts that brings to mind. David?
Oh, yeah, actually, 2 years ago, right now, I was in Iraq. So I was in a city on the Euphrates River called Heat, in Al Anbar province, and I don't know. It was a little bit rough. We had a satellite phone, so I got to call home on Thanksgiving, and that was really great. But it was my mind was turning. My mind was changing in general due to my experiences over there. And Heat was a pretty messed up city, so.
So this is going to be a better Thanksgiving for you.
Oh, definitely.
Matt Steiner, what do you remember from a Thanksgiving while you were in the service?
Oh, I mean, I just remember the only Thanksgiving that I really missed was I was in Okinawa, Japan. I wasn't in Iraq. And I just remembered bouncing to different chow halls on Camp Hansen, I believe, and just stuffing my face with turkey. That's about it.
Who are you going to be thinking about on Thanksgiving this year?
Definitely the men and women fighting Iraq right now. I hope everybody in this country keeps a prayer out for, all those men and women that are fighting for our country, that are risking their lives. And that's really it.
That's a good thought. Talia, what do you I'm thinking of maybe a Thanksgiving in Afghanistan.
Well, actually, 2 years ago, I was in Fallujah, and I think I entirely missed the holiday of Thanksgiving. We were out working at the checkpoint, searching the women as they were coming into the city. That was right around the time of their elections. And just seeing the women, and we didn't have really the vocabulary to talk about elections, but seeing how proud they were to be voting sort of replaced any feelings I had of my own Thanksgiving. But it's good to be back this year.
And that's quite a Thanksgiving memory. Something to be thankful for. Talia Havis, Matt Steiner, David Hassan, I really appreciate all of you sharing your thoughts with us, and good luck to you, and thanks for your service. Thank you. I'm Sheila Cast, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.